Namaste. Good morning, everyone. Thank you to Ramana Kendra Delhi for providing this opportunity to share with you all some of Bhagwan's words. Adarsh Kumarji, thank you so much. Delhi has been bearing the brunt of the second wave, and it has been quite, or rather extremely disheartening to see the visuals which come up. It is in times like this that the spiritual foundation becomes extremely important to face such challenges in life. Bhagwan mentioned that by and large it is suffering that puts us on the path. If not the first blow in life, then the second, or the third, or the fourth, but eventually it makes us come onto the path. And life has forced us to once again go within in this second wave. No choice has been offered. As most of you know, my talks have emphasized on peace of mind in daily living. As simple as that. As basic, as simple as peace of mind. My spiritual guide used to say that all everyone is seeking, whether they know it or not, is peace of mind. In the early days when I went to him, around the same time, I was introduced to many yogis, people with clairvoyant gifts, masters, and I started doubting whether is it truly peace of mind, or are there some other dimensions and aspects to what people are seeking. My own experience was, it is only peace of mind. And then I must add, it is Bhagwan who clarified this doubt, because I was reading talks with Sri Ramana Maharshi one day, talk 146, and I read the sentence, "The state of equanimity is the state of bliss." And I put the book down and I said, now it is confirmed. It is as simple as one's peace of mind in daily living. This was the last word for me. The truth is simple. Rameshji would say, beauty in simplicity. As the saying goes, the truth is simple. If it was complicated, everybody would get it. The ego loves all this. So I will read out some very simple, relatable quotations from talks with Sri Ramana Maharshi. Something easy to absorb. Fortunately, my work was done more than 10 years ago because I have this tendency to underline what appeals to me. And so this is what I would like to share with you all for the next half an hour or so. And then after that, if anyone would like to share something, they are more than welcome to. The first sentence, that which results in peace is the highest perfection. That which results in peace is the highest siddhi. It begins on this note. Nothing complex. What gives us peace of mind in daily living? The mind is by nature restless. Begin liberating it from its restlessness. Give it peace. Make it free from distractions. Train it to look inward and make this a habit. This is done by ignoring the external world and removing the obstacles to peace of mind. Now, this ignoring the external world, what it actually means is, according to my understanding, too much of our dependence is on the externals, which invariably change. They are transient. They let us down, so to speak. And so this pattern keeps repeating in life. If we depend on something external, it could be a friendship, it could be an object, it could be anything, something that is not within. Then the peace of mind keeps getting disturbed because our peace depends on something. And the ego can get extremely frustrated because peace is not to be found outside. Circumstances are going to change. That is your own life story. Sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. Sometimes pleasure, many times pain. That one knows. So this compulsion to hook one's peace on things external is going to make us fall into this pit again and again and again. That is what Bhagwan is pointing at. And removing the obstacles to peace of mind, which means peace is always there. It is the obstacles that have to be removed. This is a very important point that gets missed. You cannot acquire peace. Peace is your own nature. In the sleep, deep sleep state, one is at peace. In the waking state, it is the ego with its sense of doership and the drama associated with it that takes it away from this peace. The peace has not gone anywhere. It is the me and my story which gets overlaid on the peace. So when the obstacles to peace of mind are removed, which is the ego with its compulsive passion for the dead past or the imaginary future, and its deep-rooted sense of doership, I did this and you did that to me, how dare you? That is the peace destroyer. So very clearly, Bhagwan has put it in such simple words. for all of us to access. You give up this and that of my possessions. But if you give up I and mine instead, all are given up at one strike. The very seed of possession is lost. Thus, the evil is nipped in the bud or crushed in the germ itself. Dispassion or vairagya must be very strong to do this. You see, Joel Goldsmith has put this quite beautifully. He said, when we give money to someone, we think we are giving our money to someone. But where did that money come from? Through effort? Whose effort was it? What provided the effort? A sound body and mind? Good circumstances? When you give your time to someone, are you giving your time? Or was not that time gifted to you in the form of this life to offer it to someone else? My time, my money. If one lived with this awareness that the money does not belong to me but the Father, I am just an instrument through whom the flow happens. You see, that's when the sense of doership is uprooted. And that is what Bhagwan says, give up the me and the mine. Our breath, our next breath is not ours. What happens to our possessions in deep sleep? Our heartbeat is not in our control. See how you react when something you treasure gets damaged. An expensive shirt is washed the wrong way by the maid and the color runs. We'll give you an indication of how attached we are to external objects. This is a mundane example I have used, but this refers also to our judgments and opinions about people. My judgment, my opinion, this is what I feel, as opposed to what you feel. This is the me and the mine, which Bhagwan is pointing at. So the gaze is pushed within. Someone asks Bhagwan about association with the great ones. And Bhagwan replies, those moving with them closely and in sympathetic contact gradually absorb the samadhi habit from them. What does this mean? Of course, at the physical level, being in the presence of a great sage, the peace that emanates from a being of that stature, it gets absorbed, so to speak. But there is another level here. How close are we living the teachings? Or are these just consigned to book reading? And the rest of the day, they are forgotten. For example, if one is immersed in any teaching or teachings which provide one with peace of mind, and absorbed in it, contemplating on it, meditating on it, thinking about it, that starts permeating one's being, you see. It has to be something which is going on all the time. Whatever happens in your day, reflect on it towards the end of the day, maybe. Think about it. in light of whatever teaching has impacted you. You see, this reminds me of the story of Bhagwan's disciple Yaspani from Sri Lanka. He was in charge of the, I don't know if it was the Skandashram or the Virupaksha cave, but keeping it clean and neat. And he was very thorough in his job. And one day he got a scolding from the manager because the floor of the ashram was wet. And the manager told him to get out of the ashram. But Yaspani loved Bhagwan. He could not bear to be away from his master. So a situation presented itself to him. And what did he do? He saw that there was a coconut tree within the ashram, but was bending outwards from the ashram wall. So he climbed that coconut tree right till the top. So technically he was out of the ashram, yet in the ashram. And then Bhagwan had to beseech him to come down. That is called being close to the teaching. It is the priority. Yes, we can all see our Netflix and go to Dubai and Maldives for holidays and Goa, etc. But is this teaching being carried with us? Anand Mahima said, to be a human being is to be a seeker of truth. To be a human being is to be a seeker of truth. Oops. If you have surrendered, you must be able to abide by the will of God and not make a grievance of what may not please you. Things may turn out differently from what they look apparently. Distress often leads men to faith in God. You must be able to abide by the will of God and not make a grievance of what may not please you. And many of us so much love complaining. Things should not have been this way. There is nothing apart from the will of God. What is the will of God? As Joel Goldsmith would say, give up this belief in two powers, good and evil, something good happening to me and something bad happening to me. This battle with life and what happens to me, raising the sword all the time, fighting with what is, opposing what is, has to be given up. Accepting a situation for what it is and then doing precisely that which one thinks and feels one should do. As Rameshji would say, that is the enlightened way of living. The problem is that we reject what is happening. That is the first opposition to life, which creates tremendous psychological suffering. If something has been brought into one's awareness, the awareness has already accepted it, you see. Awareness cannot reject anything. Awareness is awareness. It is the me which steps in and then creates this division that leads to rejection. The world is not external. the impressions cannot have an outer origin. Because the world can be cognized only by consciousness. The world does not say that it exists. It is your impression. Even so, this impression is not consistent and not unbroken. In deep sleep, the world is not cognized, and so it exists not for a sleeping man. Therefore, the world is the sequence of the ego. Whatever goes on in our world, whatever thoughts that arise, whatever feelings arise, arise in our own consciousness. Whether it is feelings of jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, shame, hatred, malice, all these are arising in one's own consciousness. They're not really outside of us. Right now, I am not outside of you. It is in your consciousness, in your awareness, that this voice is speaking. There's truly no inside and outside. Can I be present outside this awareness? Anything you hear is within awareness. Otherwise, you would not hear it. Same with what you see. Such beautiful, direct, and simple pointers Bhagwan is giving us. And this example, which my teacher would use most often, I don't know if he was inspired by Bhagwan to, because this is exactly that. The point in the Gita where Arjuna says that I will not fight. I can fight the opposition, everyone else, but my preceptors are on the other side. And I refuse to fight them. And in protest, he puts his bow and arrow down. And Lord Krishna tells him, look here, you were born to be a warrior, trained as a warrior, to be one of the finest in the land. Your entire genetics and conditioning, etc., have been that of a warrior. So why are you assuming this sense of doership? That I will not fight. In fact, you are saying exactly the opposite. What is your nature? Must happen naturally. So pick up the bow and fight, because as time, I have already killed them. Now let's see what Bhagwan says. What does the Gita say? Arjuna refused to fight. Krishna said, so long as you refuse to fight, you have the sense of doership. Who are you to refrain or to act? Give up this notion of doership. Until that sense disappears, you are bound to act. You are being manipulated by a higher power. You are admitting it by your own refusal to submit to it. Instead, recognize the power and submit as a tool. Be fixed in the self and act according to nature without the thought of doership. This is manliness and heroism. These are Bhagwan's words. And on the same theme, the present difficulty is that man thinks he is the doer, but this is a mistake. It is the higher power which does everything, and man is only a tool. If he accepts this position, he is free from troubles, otherwise he courts them. Take, for instance, the figure in a Gopuram. Bhagwan is referring to the carvings in the temples, where outside they are carved such that they appear to be holding up the temple, where it is made to appear to bear the burden of the tower on its shoulders. Its posture and look are a picture of great strain while bearing the very heavy burden of the tower. But think, the tower is built on the earth and it rests on its foundation. The figure, like Atlas bearing the earth, is a part of the tower, but is made to look as if it bore the tower. Is this not funny? You see, this whole issue of doership, it just works so beautifully if we allow ourselves to see if there's someone in our life we don't get along with or don't like. And if the understanding dawns that this person is playing out his or her own script based on their genetics, their conditioning, whatever you call it, we don't know what happened to them in their childhood. If we release them from the sense of doing something to us and accepting that we are all instruments of the divine, then this whole burden of doership starts getting lifted from our shoulders. If one sees that the same consciousness functions through everyone, just as the same electricity functions through all the gadgets in the kitchen, bringing about whatever each gadget is designed to bring about, then there is peace. It all comes back to peace of mind in daily living. So the concept of doership is so intrinsically linked to our peace. We stop labeling and judging people for what they are supposed to have done. All that dialogue which goes on and on in the thinking mind evaporates. Here Bhagwan is referring to the significance of the cross and Jesus. The master gave the true significance of the Christian faith thus. The cross is the body. When the ego is crucified and it perishes, what survives is the absolute being, God. I and my Father are one. And this glorious survival is called resurrection. And as Rameshji would say, he said, the thinking mind operates in horizontal time, past and future. And the eternal now is in vertical time, here and now. When the operation of the thinking mind ceases, one is in the present moment, available to what is, conscious presence, not a presence where the mind is operating in the past or future. And that is the resurrection, a new way of being, a new way of living here and now. Peace is self-realization. Peace need not be disturbed. One should aim at peace only, hammering away at peace. So the questioner says, but I do not have the satisfaction. And Bhagwan replies, because your peace is temporary. If made permanent, it is called realization. Another most beautiful pointer. Pleasure consists in turning and keeping the mind within, and pain in sending it outward. There is only pleasure. Absence of pleasure is called pain. The pleasure which Bhagwan is referring to is the bliss of peace, which can only be found within. Therefore, he says, pleasure consists in turning and keeping the mind within. Pain is sending it outwards. Absence of this pleasure is called pain. Pleasure is found within means. If one abides in one's being, as Maharaj would say, abide in your being, that is where true happiness is to be found. Why? Because it does not depend on anything else. The kingdom of God is within, and where I stand is on holy ground. When I contemplate on the presence and power of God, consciousness, being established as consciousness, is where true happiness, peace, is to be found. When one remains without thinking, one understands another by means of the universal language of silence. Silence is the eternal flow of language obstructed by words. So, the point here is, when one remains without thinking, one understands another by means of the universal language of silence. When all our preconceived notions about people, our prejudices, which are based on our own conditioning, when that is silenced, the silence that is made available, the true silence, the deeper silence, in that silence, we honor the other. We allow them space to be as they are. Not how we feel they should be. You see, as Rameshji would say, this is the original sin in Advaita. We think we are the subject and the others are objects. And then we pronounce judgment upon judgment on the objects in our lives. You should be like that. You should not say that. How dare you have said this to me? You offended me. Not realizing that we ourselves are objects in manifestation, but we have usurped the subjectivity of the source, the only true subject. And we are passing judgment upon others, upon things that happen in our lives, as if we are the subject. We keep doing this again and again. Even we tell God, why did you do this to me? Again, we've usurped the subjectivity of the source. Do you know that the word silence and the word listen have the same alphabets? I'd like to end on two passages. Rather, one is a passage, one is a sentence. News of someone's death was brought to Sri Bhagwan. He said, good. The dead are indeed happy. They have got rid of the troublesome overgrowth, the body. The dead man does not grieve. The survivors grieve for the man who is dead. Do men fear sleep? On the contrary, sleep is courted, and on waking up, every man says that he slept happily. Death is longer sleep. If the man dies while yet alive, he need not grieve over others' death. One's existence is evident with or without the body, as in waking, dream, and sleep. Then why should one desire continuance of the bodily shackles? Let the man find out his undying self and die and be immortal and happy. You see, in simple words, when we die to the me and the mine, the possessions, the attachments, when we see life as this flow of events, something comes, something goes, everything is transient. This field of duality, sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain, sometimes good times, sometimes happy times. When we accept that the nature of life is duality of every conceivable kind, and we accept that nobody truly does anything, this grip of me and mine, which is the grip of the ego which is the thinking mind based on the pillars of doership, when this starts falling apart, then one is dying to all these former concepts and attachments and burdens that one has been carrying. And one is living a new life, so to speak, then, till one's last breath. And finally, I will read out this. I can't help but end on the words of peace. Bhagwan's last words to somebody. This is from another book, Ganesan's book, which I better pronounce correctly this time. Ramana Periya Puranam. I hope I've got it correct, otherwise I'm getting the stick from my volunteers. It's a big book. 221. During the last moments of Bhagwan, Subbaramaya cried inconsolably. Bhagwan's last words to him were, "Do not worry. Be at peace. Everything will be well. To be is our nature. Coming and going is the trick of the mind. Our commitment is to be pivoted to the silence and the peace within us." Make peace your priority, especially in times like this. This took more than half an hour, I apologize. I hope it wasn't too boring. Thank you for listening to these words. If anyone would like to share something or ask something, they can do so now. Yes, Poonam.
Hello, Gautam. It was a beautiful, very enlightening talk.
Thank you.
Hearing your words, my heart is beating very fast. I don't know if I'm right or it's a very basic level of thinking, but I just felt that when I was hearing your words that actually I have no relation with this person who is Poonam. Like, I'm the one who's just watching what she's doing. She's trying to understand what Gautam is saying, and she's trying to read books. She's trying to understand the non-duality. She eats, she sleeps, she reads. She is very, very much interested in non-duality and Gautam's talks and Ramesh Balsekar's talks. I've been seeing all the new videos that are being uploaded of Ramesh Balsekar ji also, and the wonderful videos. And this person called Poonam is, she acts, she reacts. Sometimes she makes a lot of mistakes. Sometimes She gets hurt with what people say. But the one who's the stillness, which is behind her, is actually does not, has no relation with this person. This person is just a doer. But the one who's watching, the stillness, which I actually am, the real me, has no relation with her, with this one, who is always thinking that sometimes she thinks that she's doing it, but actually I have no relation with it. I'm just the stillness who's watching her. And even today, now when I'm speaking to you and when I'm trying to understand your beautiful, beautiful talk and the beautiful the words that you read about Ramana Maharishi and everything, the one who's trying to understand this is not me. I'm the one who's just the one who's watching this one, who's struggling so hard to understand this teaching and to sync in with this teaching. And I've always read all your books. I've been reading. Thank you, Gautam, for this wonderful insight. I don't know. It's suddenly this kind of thought came to me that no, I'm not this one. The one who's struggling with all his actions, reactions, whatever. Sometimes I make mistakes or react to my kids also. And then I feel very guilty that I should be more patient. I should, but that one is not me. Or the one who's feeling guilty is also not me. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, my heart is beating so fast. I don't know. It's just so strange that why did I always think that I'm this one? When actually
because
I was never this
to.
One.
Because you were meant to, now you're not meant to.
Yeah, but I don't know if this is a basic level of teaching because you are such a, you're so, such an enlightened person. And
no, no, there are no levels of teaching. There's no basic, there's no advanced. These are all creations of the mind, Poonam. The heart is beating fast because the words have touched the heart. Bhagwan's words have touched the heart, not my words. And the one who wants to try and understand all these things is the one who should stop trying to understand all these things.
Yeah.
Because as you say, you already see this gap between the activities of the ego.
Yeah, I see it very clearly.
The true being, which is a beautiful gift, Poonam. I would consider that you are one of the privileged to even have that much of a gift.
Yeah, but it's still like, go into identity sometimes because that day I had an I had like little bit very small argument with my mother and that whole 2 days I could not get over it, like, so I do go into the identity, but the one who was having the argument was also not me. It was her life story or something my mother told me which really hurt me very badly. So but I couldn't get over it, although
but how
reading
did
so much
it? How did you resolve this argument with the mother?
Sorry?
How did you resolve this argument?
So 2 days I was in a very bad state. My mother is 80. So, you know, there is no... Then one of my friends told me that, which I never speak to. And suddenly that day I spoke to her. I mean, I've never spoken to that friend for a long time. Like we had no conversation at all. And suddenly, I don't know how, I spoke to her on the phone out of the blue. And then she told me that, Poonam, don't take it so much to your heart. She's 80 plus and facing all this COVID situation, being alone in India. So you should not take it to your heart because 80 plus can react anyhow, anytime, can say anything. You should consider that. I'm saying, yeah, you're right. I told my friend, oh my God, I didn't even think of this. That's true. Like 80 plus can say anything, you know, when you're faced with so much tensions around.
Poonam, that is true, but the 80 plus is an instrument through whom what happened based on her own conditioning and what is going on currently in the world, which is adding to conditioning in a different way. In other words, Poonam was meant to get hurt and Poonam got hurt. Through whom the hurt happened has to be looked at. If it was Poonam's destiny to get hurt, she got hurt. So when we stop targeting an individual or labeling an individual as the one through whom the hurt happened, then it does not mean the hurt will not happen. It means the hurt is accepted as a divine happening, which was meant to happen. You see? And it does not mean not speaking one's mind, not expressing oneself to the mother. All that is the part of the same happening. But the beauty of this is that everything is accepted. Even the hurt is accepted. So that's very beautiful what you have shared. I think everyone might have gained something from it. Thank you.
I don't know. But still, why did I go into the identity again? I was very disturbed.
Because it was God's will. If it was in Poonam's hand, she would not have gone into the identity.
Right. Now everything is fine. My mother is happy. I'm happy. We are talking. Everything is fine. But that moment, it was so difficult to handle it. Because
no. Let's hope it stays this way for some time. Okay, Poonam. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Ansh.
Thank you, Gaurav. This has been sorry,
there's a lot of disturbance in the background. Yeah.
So this has been really enlightening to have your satsang this morning and see the stillness in between your words was really exceptional. I mean, I could see how really feel sitting here. Only thing is that my question is very small because we are having a pandemic. And during this pandemic, so many deaths are happening, and it's either happening within family and friends. So how should we pass this time when we are having such a difficult time in pandemic going on and so many deaths are happening in our friends and relatives? What is your message for us?
And any words that I speak about.
I'm sorry, because there are so many kids in our family. I'm trying to calm them down.
Lots of luck with that. The nature of children is not to be calm, you see. Yes, you are right. It is the first time in the collective consciousness that people are all suffering together at such a large scale lunch. And, as I started out this talk by saying that, as Bhagwan said, it is suffering which puts us on the path. And we are seeing an all-pervasive suffering. Loved ones passing away, friends, relatives. These are tough times. And if not now, then when else to go within and question what life is about? What is happening? What do I value most in life? What do I cherish? What are my beliefs? There is no teaching which is going to take away the pain of what is, because this is a human experience. So nothing is going to remove that. But the understanding, the grace, is what takes us across the ocean of existence, as Sai Baba of Shirdi said. You see, that is why to stay close to the Master's words and teachings and to live by them is the only balm in such a situation, Ansh. We have to face what is a lot. The point is, are we able to face it with peace and equanimity, thanks to the grace, or do we have to suffer added psychological suffering over and above what is happening in our lives right now? That is the only difference. And deep peace is to be found in being silent. Okay? I think you muted yourself, so I can't hear you. Maybe we can.
Yeah.
Okay, take care. Yes, Abhishek.
Good afternoon, Gautam, sir. Good morning. So I hope all is good at your end.
All is good so far.
Great to hear that. So Gautam sir, yeah, I had been inclined towards spiritual teaching since I think almost 15 years. And now I've been listening to your talks, Ramesh Basikar sir's talks, and it's been 7 to 8 months on YouTube channels and all. So now I know that, and I've been follower of Sai Baba since almost 15 years. So now I know that I was actually following the path, but I was not living the teaching. Mm. I was not actually aware of not being aware.
Mm.
So now, after listening to all these talks, I know that as I'm also reading Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now. So I know that this is thinking mind is going here and there. In the past and future. So now I understand, okay, I'm aware in between. So most of the time I'm at peace because I listen to Sri Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi that whatever is destined to happen will happen and you should accept it because that's God's will. I understand everything very well and most of the time I'm at peace, maybe 70% of the times. But then 30% of the time, you know, this thing comes to my mind, what if I forget these teachings?
Mm.
And I know, I am when I'm talking to you and I still know this is the mischievous ego which is playing its role in between.
Yes.
But still, I know that, I'm aware that I know that, but still sometimes ego takes toll on me and I feel certain mixed emotions and I get certain different feelings. So, and it takes time for me to overcome that feeling, maybe an hour or 2 hours. I keep on juggling in mind. And then I think, oh my God, I know what I'm doing, but still I'm not getting able to get out of it. So yes. How to deal with it?
You see, that is also called the flip-flop. You know, when the light of understanding shines through, we still go back to some old patterns and conditionings. And at other times, we are in the full mode of witnessing and being aware. This is a natural course of the evolution, you could say, the spiritual evolution. Only thing that can be done, so to speak, is witnessing the flip-flop happening, allowing it to happen. Not saying, oh, bloody hell, why did I go back into this again and I can't do anything about it. Even that has to be witnessed. Even knowing that one got entangled in something, instead of fighting that, which is what the ego would love to do because it derives its sense of self from that, even that has to be witnessed.
Because indirectly, ego doesn't want to let go of that because from the back door, it's coming that, okay, what if I forget things?
Exactly.
So it's again operating. I know that. But still, it's difficult to get out of it.
Exactly. Can you see how helpless the situation is?
Exactly.
Who's the one who's helpless? Is the witness helpless or is it the ego which feels helpless? It is the ego. Why? Because it cannot control the teaching now. The ego says, my God, 9 times out of 10, I managed. That one time I couldn't. The ego did not manage the 9 times out of 10. It was the absence of the ego with its sense of doership which made those 9 times peaceful. And therefore, as you so rightly said, the ego keeps coming in through the back door.
So is it normal, Gautam?
It's absolutely normal.
Because earlier, I think I was driven by this mind. That's why I was never aware of it, that mind is dragging me.
Yes.
Now that I'm aware of it, so ego is coming into picture.
It is the thinking mind. You are aware of the thinking mind driving you, and the thinking mind is the ego. So what you will find is that the thinking mind starts operating less and less in your life. But it will still operate because there are years and years of conditioning behind it, you see. So once in a while, it's going to pop up and it's going to take you away from that peace.
It bursts.
Yeah. However it wants to, but even that need only be witnessed. And then you really see this play of life that you may not intend it, but sometimes the peace is lost. Many times it's there. And you just see this whole show going on.
Exactly. Many times it is there. That's the best part.
Personal interest in this drama.
Because I really don't want to let go of these teachings and all. And I sometimes get afraid. So that is ego.
You have no choice. Your head is already in the tiger's mouth, as Bhagwan would say.
And
if you try to let go, you won't be able to let go.
And one more thing I would like to share is 2 weeks ago when we had, of course, Sunday talk 2 weeks ago also. So around for 1 hour, I noted down an experience for 1 hour in the night at around 11 p.m. 2 weeks ago, I actually felt my presence. When you say being aware, being conscious, it was just for 1 hour. I was wide awake and I was just looking through things and I was not impacted. And there was so much of lightness. And I thought, my God, what one could also feel this. It's true self.
That's beautiful.
So I felt this for 1 hour just, but I felt it.
Beautiful.
It was lighter than the light. And I actually noted down in words. And I also wrote down that I cannot write in 2 words because there were no thoughts, hence no words.
Yes. If thine eye be single, thy whole body will be full of light. When you don't see through the eyes of duality, but the eye of singularity, that is what happens. It was a gift for you, Abhishek.
Yeah, for 1 hour, it was a gift for me, I think. But as I mentioned that it happens to me throughout the day, but at times it does not happen because I think, what if I forget these things? Yeah.
Anyway. So. Great. Thank you for sharing your beautiful thoughts.
And just last one thing, it's very funny. So I started reading Power of Now and I'm already midway.
Uh-huh.
So I thought to take a pen and note down the important points in the Power of Now. And the funny part is almost half the book is underlined. So everything looks like to be very important in that book.
I think many of us have had this experience where we've underlined large parts of certain books.
Yes.
You see why? Because that recognition is already there within oneself. It is not that we are learning something new. It is already within us and those words are recognized, recognized, cognized again, what we have forgotten. Okay?
Right. Thank you, sir. Thank you. And stay safe.
I'm talking to you. Yes, Holger. Are you there, Holger? I think Holger has disappeared. Let's move on to Vandana. That can be the last.
So Gautam, a quick thing. Last time you asked the question that how has the teaching impacted you in these times? So I thought about it and like during the day, we're just mechanical doers doing as we are trained to act. But in the evening, when you come and introspect, and that is when you realize that you were only part of an orchestra, the conductor was someone else. And that is what prepares you for the next day to take on the next day. So that is how I think the teaching has impacted me. And the second thing I want to make a comment is that I think we should all be eternally grateful to Arjun for being what he was, a weakling, and not doing his duty. At least we got Gita out of it. Thank you.
Yes. I mean, it was precisely, you see, the Gita is the classic model of the you could call it guru-disciple relationship. You could call it the higher self and the ego consciousness. And both had their parts to play. Without Arjun, the Gita would not have happened, you see. Yeah. That is also the beauty of the egoic mind. And yes, we have to be grateful to Arjun for sure.
Thank you.
How are things? Are they easing up or are they still difficult at the front line of the...
No, they are. Definitely there's an improvement.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll just take Holger. I think he's back and then we'll end the session.
Yes. Hello, Gautam. Now it works.
Yes, Holger.
Yes. Thank you so much. I'm so fascinated by the simplicity of the piece. And my old thinking never could have allowed it to be so simple.
Hmm.
Because I was so complicated. I had so much identity in my thinking. And now just to be empty, just with the piece, is just such a gift. It's, I don't know how to say this, but there's lots of gratitude here. And
thank you, Harald.
Just wonderful. Just God, wonderful.
Please express yourself so beautifully. It's a pleasure to hear you.
Thank you.
Okay. Can we sit in silence for just about 2 minutes, maybe? I will change the settings so I can see all of y'all. Where did that go? I would like to share something with y'all today. Of course, in India, especially North India, lot of stress, fear. I think we have been collectively shaken up by the visuals of the burning funeral pyres, the helplessness, the very deeply moving visuals of helplessness which families are dealing with. And what can one offer them as such? Besides those of us who get moved to be on the front line and act, those who make donations, many males, many calls I have got. And it reminded me of the year 2008, when there was a terrorist attack in Bombay in 3-4 locations. One was a hotel, and there was a group that had come down from the USA. They were staying in one of the hotels, a big group of about 25 people, and two of them lost their lives in the restaurant. And it was ongoing, this captivity in the hotel with the terrorists there for a couple of days. I think that was the last time I spoke with Eckhart, because he too knew the group of Master Charles Scanlon, and he called up my sister. My sister spoke to him, or maybe she called him. And I was in the office. And so I went into the conference room and closed the door. And he said to me that in such situations, words are superfluous. What we can offer is our silence, our being, presence. What offering can be greater than that in such times? And so he asked me, he said, "Are you very busy right now?" I said, "No, I mean, I'm talking to you. What greater privilege could there be?" And he said, "All right, let's both of us be on each end of the line and just be the space and silence for what has happened." And I don't recall how long I was holding the phone in one hand and he at the other end of the line in Vancouver. And it really struck me deeply that the greatest gift we can offer to those who are really troubled in such times is the gift of pure being. Being there for someone, that's all. So for these 2 minutes, let's just be united in our silence, being there for each other. Thank you.